Hi, and welcome to the Crime Pod. I'm Sam.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Dawn.
So this week there are three of us. So we are so, so lucky to be joined by Dawn, who is from the Scottish Murder Podcast, and she is going to give us a case this week. So sit tight and listen to a new voice for a change. As I said, this week we have Dawn from Scottish Murders Podcast. So if you have never listened, get over to Dawn's podcast. It is fabulous. We absolutely love it. And she reached out to us and we've done a collab together. So we have done an episode over with her and we are so excited to welcome her to do an episode with us. So hello and welcome to the Crime Pod, Dawn. Thank you for coming.
I'm so excited. Thanks for having me on. And do go and listen to Scottish Murders episode with the girls because it was a good one.
Thank you. And it was a Sam one, guys, and it wasn't ancient.
I should have saved it for myself, like, for our sake.
It was, oh, that's one so, I didn't know.
For those that don't know you, Dawn, tell us a bit about yourself. Tell us how you kind of ended up here.
So just started the podcast, just listened to true crimes quite a lot of time, but it was mainly American cases, so just decided to start up one of my own. I didn't know about yous at the time, because you started off just covering Scottish ones. And I hadn't found yous at the time. I might not have even bothered if I'd come across yous.
We were saying that. Do you know, Scotland crime pods are such a, like, do you know, it's such a small community crime podcast with us, whereas you're right, you go and listen to, like, your American ones first or whatnot. So,
spoiled for choice, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And your cases are all just based in Scotland, aren't they?
They are. Although I'm doing a wee away season just now because, you know, There's a lot of cases out there that, like you said in my podcast, you just want to cover, you know, you're interested in. But because I'm only based in Scotland, I had to think, you know, what can I do? So I've done a wee away series. So I'm getting to cover
episodes
out with Scotland.
Oh, that sounds brilliant. And you're just on your own just now, aren't you?
I am now. It started off with my sister, but she it wasn't for her. She doesn't like the commitment.
Fair.
I understand.
That I was going to say, that's like Sam.
Trapped.
No, you have been going along. You've been going like a year more than me. So, you know, you're doing amazing.
But I mean, doing it yourself as well, that is hard. I think I've done one episode myself when Sam was away or something. And it is really difficult because I think that's a lot of the crime pod is us bouncing off each other. So the fact you do it yourself, do all the research, the edit and everything week after week, that is amazing. So hats off to you because that is a lot of work.
Absolutely. And I wasn't sure, but, you know, like you, that's what I listen to, two people together. So when Nicole stopped doing it with me, I was like, God, people are not going to like this. Just one person with no, like, you see, bouncing off each other. So it took a wee while to just get into that groove, but it's all right now.
But then, you know, some people do, because when I'm listening to you, I feel like you're just telling me. Oh, nobody else is here. I feel like you're in my kitchen cooking with me and you're only telling me the story. So it's actually really nice. It's a lot more kind of personal, whereas but it's, you know, I think there's pros and cons for having a co-host and not having a co-host. But you're welcome here anytime you're lonely, feel free to come and jump on here. You're always welcome with Sam and I.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you at CrimeCon. That's going to be amazing.
Yes, for so those. Good. I think we've got a few listeners that are coming to CrimeCon, so there's another person to look out for, guys. Dawn will be there, and I think that'll be fab to kind of finally meet you. It's so funny listening to all these voices, eh? We were saying that over in your podcast. Yes. We all listen to each other, and then we actually don't know what each other look like, or we've never met in person, so that's really cool.
You do get a little bit starstruck when you first meet them. You're like, oh my God, you're famous.
You can have one of our badges that have.
Oh, I love badges. Like, you get a lanyard when you go to CrimeCon and, you know, it's nice to have a collection around
your... Put badges on it, yeah. Well, you can definitely have a crime pod one.
Deal. We'll do a swap.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward love to it.
But anyway, Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, grand, I'm ready to listen to your case now. I'm excited.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, just like yours, mine's was a listener suggestion as well. So thanks to Susie for suggesting it. And it's not as old as yours. It's back in 2009. Not as old as yours, Sam. But I like the older cases as well. Mind, I would do a, you know, way back.
Thank you, Dawn. Please say it again, because Caitlin just can't get in her head that they're great.
Oh, I really enjoy it. And you know, it's the way they speak. Do you ever read the books to accompany that? I like to do research and read the books. And it's just been able to listen to even like the newspaper reports, the way they reported crimes back then and the words they used. I love that. And just...
If someone got poisoned in the 1800s, Sam knows about it. She absolutely lives for it.
I guess it's
him. Yeah. But no, I'm looking forward to 2009. That's better.
Okay, then. So mine started off as a missing persons inquiry. It was when 10-year-old Holly Fallon didn't turn up for school, and our teacher contacted the police. It was Tuesday the 31st of March 2009, and she didn't turn up for school for a couple of days, and they weren't able to get hold of Diane, which was Holly's mum, either. So they contacted the police and a missing persons inquiry started. Have you heard this case? Do you know
the
it?
Name?
I don't think I have.
Oh, obviously.
That's
Sam.
Not
shock. No, the name definitely rings a bell, but I don't know why yet. But no, something I was just about to say, though, actually, like, I can't imagine the stress of a school when a student's missing, but to then not be able to get a hold of their parent as well.
Yeah.
That is so, so stressful.
Of course. But I did check, you haven't done it, because I know, Caitlin, you did a lot of research one time on a case that you did already.
Oh, Dawn. Dawn now knows my deepest secret. I don't think we've ever told the podcast that. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I told Dawn that the one time we really messed up is because it was the House of Blood murders that Sam covered. And I'd searched the person's name, checked that we hadn't done it, did all this research, sat down to record, said the intro, and Sam was like, Caitlin, we've done this. And I was like, don't believe you. Ha, ha, ha. Thought she was joking. No. Yeah, she had. So I had to scrap it and start from the beginning. So... well done for checking, because honestly, I nearly done that again a couple of weeks ago, eh, Sam?
Did you?
I text Sam a name being like, why does this name ring a bell? And she was like, Googling it. And it was the Temple Wood murders in Dundee, but I had got her name and I was like, oh, that's a good case. And we'd done it 3 years ago. So I don't know what's going on with me. We'll have repetitions all the time now. Here we go.
Well, I'm glad you haven't heard of this one. So the police that came on did their missing person inquiry. They appealed to the public for any information, but there was no confirmed sightings at all. They carried out searches in the area with dogs, including gardens, outbuildings, had the police helicopter involved, and they even searched a nearby pond, but there was nothing. They did say during one of the appeals that, you know, Diane had a lot of contacts throughout the UK, so she might be with some of them, but at the same time, she didn't have any transport, and they just weren't sure how she would have been able to travel there without being seen by anybody. They were asking people to check any photos that they'd taken, just in case she appeared in the background of them. There was nothing. And plus, Diane's bag and purse had actually been found in her flat, and Holly's Nintendo DS game was there as well, which apparently she took everywhere with her. So it wasn't
looking... I don't blame her.
Good,
Nintendo DS.
We were Nintendo DS kids, we were.
Were you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nintendogs all the way.
Well, then you get it. She's not going to have gone anywhere without that then.
Exactly.
And she didn't, because sadly, 11 days later, the bodies of Diane and Holly were found. But let me just go back to the beginning. So 43-year-old Diane Fallon and her 10-year-old daughter Holly lived in Cronbury near Cummock in East Ayrshire. Diane was originally from Paisley and she had three other adult children, four brothers and one younger sister, but she and Holly had moved to Cronbury a few years before. Cronbury, do you know where Cronbury is? I'd never even heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
No, I hadn't either. Yeah. But it lies on the A70 between Cummock and Muirkirk, and it's about an hour's drive south of Glasgow city centre.
So I was going to say, Dawn, I'm glad you said Glasgow, because the first two, I was like, still don't have a clue what you're saying.
I know.
I was the same. I was like, that's not helped me at all.
Yeah, I know. I was exactly the same. I had to go that little bit further and find out where it actually was in relation to Edinburgh or Glasgow. I always do it. You know, in relation to Glasgow or Edinburgh, because
I feel like everything is an hour from Glasgow. Mm-hmm. Every place is an hour from Glasgow.
You can picture it when you know it's where it is from one of these two cities, can't you?
Absolutely.
So Cronbury, it's a really small hamlet with only about 32 houses, and there was only 52 children at the local school. So it was really close-knit, so everybody kind of knew everybody else. So now we're on to Saturday, the 28th of March, a few days before Holly and Diane were reported missing. And they had gone to a fun day that day, which had been organised in Cronbury. So they had a great day that day, and then they headed home. Diane had a really good friend who lived just in the next hamlet, and they spoke to each other every day. They were always down at Diane was always down at her house, so when she couldn't get hold of her as well, she was actually got in touch with the police at the same time because she couldn't get hold of Diane too. But anyway, Angie, her friend's name, was the last person to speak to Diane, and she spoke to her on the night of the 25th of March. Diane had a downstairs neighbour. She lived in like a black, you know, flat. So there are like houses that have been split into flats. So there was like two up, two down, two flats. So there was like four in a block.
Yes, yeah, you're my grands.
So Diane had a downstairs neighbour, but it was like diagonally across from her. And it was 26-year-old Thomas Smith. And they'd become good friends. And Angie had bought some pyjamas for Holly. So Thomas Smith had gone down to Angie's house, not too far, got the pyjamas on the Saturday evening and brought them back up and gave them to Holly. And then Angie had phoned her later on about 9:45, and she'd heard Holly in the background. She phoned Diane at 9:45, and she heard Holly in the background saying how much she loved her pyjamas. So that was the last time that she'd spoken to her. That's the last time that they'd been, you know, heard alive, seen alive. Now, what everybody didn't know in the village, including Diane and Holly, was that Thomas Smith was a registered sex offender. He'd been placed on the register after assaulting a 10-year-old girl in Teesside in the northeast of England. He was jailed for 6 months in 2006, and when he was released, he was Scottish and he moved back to Scotland, and then eventually settled in Cronbury about a year or so before the two, Diane and Holly, were found murdered.
See, that's a hard one when you start talking about, like, sex offenders and stuff.
Yeah.
Because you can get put on the register for something that's completely irrelevant to, say, harming children, because there's such a vast thing. But then when it is something so severe and it's like you're on the register, you've now living next door to a child, it's like there needs to be something there for people to know. But then you don't want people to know because people abuse people. But you know what I mean? It's a hard one.
It's a hard one. This is kind of why I thought this was quite an interesting case, because, well, I go on to say, you know, yes, he was on the register, and obviously the police didn't do what they should have done by monitoring him, but at the same time, they've got a reason is why they didn't start monitoring him and speaking to the neighbours, is because they didn't want them to know that he was a sex offender. So it was, you know, they didn't want, in case he, you know, was rehabilitated, and they didn't want to do that. Obviously, they made a mistake, but I guess there's a fine line, and it's finding, you know, the right balance of who do you tell, what do you tell, when do you tell that this mm-hmm. is a sex offender. Anyway, so Diane became really good friends with Thomas Smith, and they were exchanging messages all the time, text messages, also on the night of the 28th of March. And it was Thomas's 26th birthday that day. So after he'd got Holly the pyjamas from her friend Angie's house, he texted Diane and said, did her and Holly want to come down and play pool on his new pool table? So the pair of them went down. It must have been quite late. And I was thinking, you know, it was at 9:45 when she was speaking to her friend and Holly was still up. I'm like, 10 years old. I wonder how long she stayed up for. But then it wasn't a school night. So I'm just thinking, oh, she's a wee bit late up. You know what? Am I wrong? I don't have 10-year-old kids, do you?
No, that is... No. I feel like that is late for 10 years old, though.
Hi, I was thinking to go down
but if you're,
and play pool if you're as out, well.
If it's the weekend or if it's not school night, you get away with murder and you can be like, please. And then also as well, we've all had parents or whatever, it's like they're having a party and you're sleeping under a chair.
Yeah. Like, nah, very different childhoods there, sat on a bed. That didn't happen to me. Are you okay?
Okay. Yay.
You've just absolutely outed your mum there. Social services.
So what you're saying is that's not bad at all. That's quite normal.
It's fine, that's really.
So anyway, they went down and they played pool for a while. Holly had a diary. She wrote in her diary every single day. And the last entry was on the 28th, when she went missing. And it said, "Dear Diary, I am in Tom's house. My mum and he are playing snooker. I want to play and hope I can. Love you. Bye." So that was the last, you know, it's putting her in Thomas's house. And that was the wee sort was wanting to play pool.
Sure.
Anyway, I know. So anyway, it was 11 days after Holly and Diane went missing, and they'd found nothing. They hadn't, which I kind of find a bit strange, they hadn't found out that there was a sex offender living down below Holly and Diane. They hadn't found anything. They were just still hunting about, and I don't know. But anyway, he confessed to his dad. He said that he'd accidentally murdered Diane and Holly, and his dad was saying that Diane had come at him with a knife. And his dad said, okay, just get out of my house and go to the police and tell them what you've done. But his dad actually called the police himself and told him what his son had said. So that was good. He wasn't messing about. So Thomas
Smith. Yeah, that is fake, actually.
It is, isn't it?
The parent, yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know whether it's because he'd done something like that before. He was just like, oh, I've had enough. Get out of my house and tell them what you've done. But anyway, he was arrested and taken in for questioning. Query again, he confessed that he'd accidentally murdered Diane and Holly. What he said was Diane had come at him with a knife, and so he'd put a cable around her neck just to knock her out. And then as this is going on, Holly then came into his flat to look for her mum, and she saw what was going on, and obviously she immediately tried to get him off her mum. And Thomas said that he apparently shouted at Holly, you know, just calm down, it's okay, I'll explain what's going on, it's all right. But she just wouldn't listen to him. I mean, I can't imagine why she wouldn't listen to him. Your mum's getting, you know, strangled, and he's trying to explain, it's all right, nothing's bad happening.
Yeah, here. I'm surprised that he thought she was going to listen, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. But he's saying, while this is going on, Diane's swinging a knife at him the whole time, and he's afraid that she's going to get up off the floor and stab him. So he ends up putting the cable around Holly's neck as well, and that's when he accidentally kills them both. But he denied at this point any sexual contact with Holly. That wasn't what happened at all. He also said this when he put the cables around her neck, apparently this is a technique that he perfected while he was in the army. So I don't know who'd been putting cables around whose neck, but never mind.
But even if you're learning that in the army, you're not meant to just do that to people.
Why are you perfecting that as well?
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So after he'd obviously killed them both, he then apparently pushed their bodies out of the living room window, put them into his car, and he drove to a body of water about a 3-minute drive away from the flats, and he threw Holly's body in the water and covered her with rocks. He then continued driving south of Cronbury for about 4 miles, and this is where he dumped Diane's body, just in undergrowth. So on the 8th, after he confessed that he'd accidentally killed Diane and Holly to the police, he then told them where the bodies were. And they did say, the police later, that if he hadn't told them where the bodies were, they likely wouldn't have found them. So Holly's semi-naked body was found at 4:20 p.m. on the 8th of March, hidden in river under about 100 rocks, which he'd obviously stacked up on her to hold her down. She was wearing, her new pyjama bottoms that she'd got on the 28th of March. One of it was tied round her right ankle, and her face had been covered with a jacket. Diane's body was found at 5 p.m. in undergrowth, and she'd been eaten by wild animals. So it wasn't Diane's.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never heard that one before.
No, and it was Debbie, Diane's younger sister. She identified Holly's body, but she said she couldn't identify Diane's. She just said that would have tipped her over the edge. So she
No wonder.
I know, that's awful.
Absolutely. Ugh.
So the postmortems were carried out, and they revealed that Diane and Holly had both been subjected to extreme violence and torture. And I'm going to give her a little trigger warning, because it does talk about child sexual abuse now. So according to the Daily Record on the 5th of February 2010 and the Daily Mail on the 6th of February 2010, Holly had sustained a blunt force trauma to her head, and she had significant internal injuries from a sex attack. So she was raped. And Thomas Smith's DNA was found on her body. It also said that a condom was found not far from the body, and it was his as well. Obviously his DNA was in that too. So Holly's cause of death was strangulation. When Diane's hands, when she was found, her hands were tied behind her back with the same computer tape cable that she'd been strangled with. She had a fractured skull and pelvis and three broken ribs, as well as fractures to bones in her throat. And she also had injuries to her private parts. And it was thought that she may have... Oh, I know, it was awful. It was thought she may have survived for less than 35 minutes after the head injuries were inflicted, and her cause of death was compression of the neck.
And that's horrific injuries on anybody, but on a child, like a small body. That is such an amount of injuries. What a shame.
I know. And, oh, yeah. Thomas Smith, he appeared in court on the 9th of April, charged with Holly and Deanne's murders and attempting to defeat the ends of justice. And he made no plea or declaration, and he was remanded in custody. And this was when the tributes started coming in for Holly. She was described, or Holly and Deanne, and Holly was described as being a happy, bright and able pupil who was fondly regarded by everyone who knew her. A family friend said that Holly was such a bright girl who loved school, and Deanne was caring and quiet. Deanne's sister and Holly's aunt said in the Daily Record in October 2010 that Deanne was such a trusting person and Holly was a lovely girl. And they were just easy prey for Thomas Smith, and it makes her sick to think that he was targeting them all along. She actually said that she met him once when she visited Deanne at her flat. He pulled up in his car and Deanne had introduced them, and he said, oh, hello, and she said he seemed, you know, quiet and shy, and she just never gave him a second thought. And she said, knowing what she knows now and what he's done, she just wishes she'd punched him in the face. So that must have been sick, knowing that this...
That's not even actually a lot. I was expecting you to say she was going to do more, and I'd totally back her for it.
Mm-hmm. But they were just devastated, and it was just hard for them all. So Thomas Smith, he appeared at the High Court in Glasgow on the 5th of February, and he admitted, he didn't make them all go through a trial, he admitted raping and murdering Holly and murdering Deanne. And he was sentenced to 32 years, well, sentenced to life and told he had to serve a minimum of 32 years. And the judge that was presiding over, Judge Lord Turnbull, he said, even in these courts where we see the worst of humanity, your conduct stands out as exceptional. So it was pretty bad. After the sentencing, Deanne and Holly's family, they shouted at him, saying that, you know, rot in hell. And they hoped he was tortured in prison as he had tortured Deanne and Holly.
He probably will be, though, to be fair, especially if he is a child killer.
Yeah, well, you know how they're treated in prison.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's in for a hell of a time. And you just said he was evil, personified. Personified? Is that the right word?
I think so.
Evil personified. And it was just said that, you know, Deanne was a loving mother, a daughter, a sister, an aunt, and Holly was a beautiful sister, a granddaughter, niece and cousin. And it's just, you know, the loss has just been a huge impact to their family. And just something missing now, and so that was quite sad.
Such a shame, isn't it?
I know. So, you know, what really got to them, though, was the fact that he lied at the beginning when he told the police that there was no nothing sexual had happened when it had. But the family have begged Thomas Smith to tell them, well, why he murdered Deanne and Holly, but, you know, what actually took place the night he did murder them. Because they're left with this awful thought, was Holly left alone with him after her mother died? And what did he do to her while she was by herself? And they're just traumatized, and, you know, by what happened. Was she, you know, what did she go through?
Yeah. I take it, is he not telling them?
No.
Do you know what, though? That's so like Ian Brady, isn't it? Where he had the power, like Ian Brady, the Moors murderer, he had the absolute power to never say where Keith Bennett's body was, and his mum was so traumatised by that, and that's exactly, like, he has lost, he's got no power anymore, he's in prison, but he has this one bit of power where he can keep that information from them, and it's just awful. Yep.
It is, it's the power, isn't it? There's no reason for them to tell, it's sick, but they just don't care, they don't have that empathy.
No, absolutely.
They're just left with that. But I don't understand. You're in prison for it. Just
I know. Say, I think, you know, it's not going to... You're not going to get longer. You're not going to... It's actually to show that you're not a complete monster, but he obviously is.
Yeah, oh no, well, he is. So just after the sentencing, Detective Chief Superintendent John Mitchell of Strathclyde Police said, I'd like to thank Diane and Holly's family for the support throughout, which, you know, must have been unbelievably difficult for them, and but their efforts have assisted in the investigation. And then he said, it's only right that we have conducted a full review into the management of Thomas Smith, and we'll be sharing the content of this review with the family and then submitting it to an independent multi-agency process. And if lessons can be learned from this case, rest assured they will be. So it's just, it's quite interesting what the review said. Well, by the way, Thomas Smith, after he was given his sentence, he appealed the length of time, the 32 years, to say that, you know, he believes he should have been, should be considered for parole sooner. But this appeal was thrown out.
Why? Exactly. Why?
Well, because, you know, he told them he told the police where the bodies were, so that should count for something.
It's awfully.
I know. So, how exactly had Thomas Smith been allowed to stay near a 10-year-old girl, literally become her neighbour after being found guilty of assaulting a 10-year-old girl in Teesside, where he'd been sentenced and placed on the sex offenders register? Well, apparently, the report said that he had complied with the terms of the register. He was known to Strathclyde Police, which became Police Scotland later. So what went wrong? According to an article in the BBC News on the 11th of November 2011, the review highlighted a few things. It did say that, well, it's saying that the residents of Cronbury were not told that 26-year-old Thomas Smith had been jailed for 6 months in 2006 for sexually assaulting a 10-year-old girl in Teesside. So what do you think about that? Do you think people should be told that they're living next door or there's somebody? I know it's difficult because they're saying...
That is so, so difficult because, yes, I think I would like to know if I had children and I was living somewhere. However, if they are reformed and if, do you know, what is the point? You know, you're putting something on your kind of like criminal record for life. However, that's horrible. That's a really difficult question because I want to say yes. However, I think it's because... I'd like to say yes because... I think people are I want to imagine that everyone's like me and that they just want to know for peace of mind and they are aware. Whereas you see these kind of paedophile hunter groups and you see people on social media nowadays, TikTok and stuff, just turning up outside somebody's house that's a known sex offender and just hurling abuse at them. And it's like, but why? So yes. I think that would be so dangerous for that person. Also, however, Sam, what do you think?
I'm with you and I'm also not, because you would want to know, like you said, for peace of mind, but there's people out there that are not gonna do well with that information, and they could hurt someone. But you can also end up on the sex offenders register for, you know, having a wee outside next to a park and you got caught, but you literally, you might have just been drunk and you were needing the toilet. Or maybe you're just needing the toilet, you weren't drunk at all. So I think there's, but then obviously that's not put on the record. You're just a sex offender.
I think it'd be good to have a version of it that you can kind of not figure out exactly what their crimes are, but if there was different categories, not just category A, category B, category, but actually saying, but then that's really difficult because for having a wee outside, you're probably going to get done with indecent exposure. Mm-hmm. So indecent exposure is having a pee outside, but indecent exposure is also standing with your willy out when a group of women are walking past. Do you know what I mean? So that again is such a fine line, but I don't know if there should be something or a database that you can search and find out how many sex offenders are in your area or whatnot. But again, I think child sex offenders can't live so close to a school. There's some of that. I don't know. That's really hard. It'd be good we've got a lot of listeners that message us and stuff, so it'd be good to know other people's opinion as well.
I think what you do expect or hope that at least if you're not told about it, you're not made aware about it because of these reasons that you've said, that you would hope that they're being, the offenders are being managed properly, that they're being monitored, that their, you know, addresses or where they're staying is suitable. And clearly none of that happened with Thomas Smith, because his address wasn't suitable. So there was failings there. So because there's failings, then, you know, you kind of, it's just so tricky, you know, you can't.
It's so difficult. And yeah. I think a good example, I know it's not sex crimes, but a good example is the murder of James Bulger.
Oh, like, I don't know how you covered that one. Oh, that was awful.
That was hard. But if you look at the two perpetrators, one of them has gone off and nobody's ever heard from them again. Yep. And they have completely reformed and they've obviously living a different life. The other one's been in and out of prison, has, you know, been done with child pornography. So it shows that reformation works and it also doesn't work. I think that's like a perfect example to show both sides of it.
So if you were to disclose, you know, the one that is reformed and getting on with his life's location.
Yeah, that's a shame.
You can't, then it's not fair, you know, it's not fair is not the right words, but you've got to give them a chance, I suppose. So yeah, it's really tricky, but you just hope that it's been managed, that they're been managed. This man wasn't, Thomas Smith wasn't, but according to the Scotsman, he wasn't seen by a police officer. So he was released from prison late in 2006. He wasn't seen by a police officer from the 24th of September 2007, so like a year later, to the 13th of May 2008. And this was 3 months after he moved to Cronbury. So he wasn't seen at all. Officers did visit his property in Cronbury on 5 separate occasions, but they, and they called his phone as well, but they never had got a reply. So instead of proactively maybe taking the opportunity to speak to neighbours, or even they're supposed to look over the fence to see if there's any children's toys, you know, just be aware, or even look and see who's living in that area.
Yeah, absolutely.
They didn't. They just, that was it. They tried. They didn't want to do that because they didn't want to raise awareness that there might be somebody in the neighbourhood that was on the sex offenders register. So you can't even trust that they're doing the job, you know, properly. But at the same time, there were 200 registered sex offenders in the area, not in Cronbury, but in that area, at the time of Diane and Holly's murder. And there were only 6 people assigned to manage these people.
How is that even possible?
Well, it got worse because a lot of them were on sick leave or on annual leave. So there was actually one person had 80 on their caseloads to manage at that time. So, but then why were they wasting their time going out 5 separate occasions when they're already got so much work to do? Be proactive and look around the area. See who's there. Is there children's toys or, you know, anything going on? So they didn't. So that's, you know, I can see why, okay, they're overworked and they're under resourced. But at the same time, you're not using the resources you've got beneficially. So that was a bit annoying as well. What do you think about that?
I think that's really difficult because people are entitled to annual leave, people are entitled to be off sick, but I don't understand how they ever thought that was going to work. So if you're saying, let's bring people back into the community that have reformed and we'll just manage it, but then you're literally not able to do that because of resources, that's you setting up to fail, basically, and you're not just failing the community, but you're failing the person as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I think that's shocking, but is that all over the kind of UK thing at the moment, of where are they getting these resources from? Yes.
Yeah, and I'll get that to this bit. So the next thing is, apparently, and I couldn't find out what the incidents were, but apparently in the time that Thomas Smith was living in Cronbury, Strathclyde police had been called to 38 incidents in that area. And at no point was he questioned, or was his address, was he thought about, oh, is this to do with this man? There was nothing. He was never linked to any of it. But I can't find what the incidents were, but anyway, he was never involved in it at all. So that was another missed opportunity, I guess, even just to have a wee look and see what's going on. It was found afterwards that he actually was involved in 2 separate relationships while he was living there. One was with a 16-year-old girl who he'd met online, and she moved in with him. She reported that he was violent. Well, he violently assaulted her on several occasions. He banned her from seeing friends or phoning her mum, and he locked her in the house when he went out. And he was also in
another... How old was he at this point?
25, he would have been, because he's 26 in this.
So, again, like, that just shows, because a 16-year-old, you're not going to have anything in common with him if you're a 25-year-old guy, unless you're doing it for an alternative motive.
Exactly. And he also went with, seen another woman. She had three children, three young children, and he would stay with her, which was breaching his conditions, but he would stay with her in Kilmarnock. None of this was discovered until afterwards, because nobody was checking on him. Nobody was seeing that he was going somewhere else and seeing, children, living with children.
It's insane, isn't it?
I know. So the other problem was he was deemed as a high risk when he came out of prison, but it wasn't explained in the paperwork why. He was high risk. It wasn't explained that he was on the sex offenders register. It wasn't explained that he'd been in prison. It wasn't informed or objective or anything. It was just this, he's high risk. So there was a problem there as well. The communication. There was also a social inquiry report from Ayrshire Council was made. It made reference to the fact that he'd been convicted of sexual assault against a child, but he put his risk of conviction as low. They put it as low, his risk to children as medium, and his risk to the public as low. So that was coming from when he was put out of prison. So, you know, the Strathclyde police weren't getting the proper information from other parties. There's supposed to be multi-agency, communication, and there wasn't. So it's fair enough to blame Strathclyde Police. They didn't do their job and they were under-resourced. But if they're not getting the right information, what they're doing, they're working with what they can.
Well, exactly. They're not psychics. So.
Yeah, I know. But at the same time, what information they did get, it wasn't put at the foot. So apparently got a Scottish intelligence database, and whoever was working with this man, they weren't putting information on that database, so nobody was able. It was again lack of communication, so it was crap, wasn't it? It was just shite.
Absolutely.
The other thing that they said, I'm almost finished, right? I've right got into this, but the other thing that they said was, apparently, registered sex offenders are becoming increasingly aware of their rights and the limited powers the police actually have in relation to managing them. So, instead, in a world where we've got, talk about complaints and litigation, they're actually discouraged from taking the initiative and doing that because they're frightened of, the repercussions. So that doesn't help either. So that's, they're kind of got into trouble if they do think proactively. They're told, don't do that, because there might be repercussions for us. So that doesn't help either. So anyway, there was 34 recommendations made after the report, and it included obviously a better system of sharing intelligence, dedicated monitoring of the convicted criminals, wider powers should be allowed to the police, such as searching sex offenders' properties without a warrant and examining their mobile phones, as well as being trained a bit better. What do you feel about them searching people's homes without warrants and all that? That could get on phones, that could get a wee bit crossing the line sometimes as well, do you think?
Yeah, that's hard. That is really hard.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about that.
I think, to be honest as well, though, nowadays, I know this was back in 2009, but I think 2024, people will be searching our phones easy peasy. Like, you know what? Nothing's kind of hidden as well as we think it is.
Yeah, no, of course.
If that makes sense. So, yeah, I don't agree with it, don't get me wrong, but I think, nothing's private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as usual, this annoys me. I don't know whether about you, but Strathclyde Police, after the report was, told of all the problems all the issues that there'd been, they apologised to the family for everything that had gone wrong. And I just, for me, because I don't know about you, but I cover a lot of cases, and it's always, it seems to be, copy and paste. It's just like, that's what they do.
Yeah, please apologise.
Please apologise. Then there's another mistake.
Constantly.
Yeah, and you think, okay, there's funding problems and there's resources, I get that, but it's always like they're fighting fires. They never seem to get ahead, rather than wait for a problem or a murder.
Or learn from their mistakes,
They just wait for someone who will get the report. Oh, yes, we were bad. We're sorry. Oh, we won't do it again. And it's just like...
Yeah, it constantly happens.
Yeah, you must get sick of apologising. If you just, like, think a wee bit ahead, and what can you do to make it better? Rather, I mean, how can they think that having 200 people in the area, you know, sexual on the register in the area, and having six people monitoring, how is that going to work? Just think
no,
a wee
just,
bit.
No, it's setting up to fail already, so...
Yeah. But the family, oh, you have to feel sorry for the family. But again, they sat down with the police and other people, all the multi-agencies that were involved, and they were happy that they got to express their anger that people weren't doing their job, and if they had been, Diane and Holly might not have been murdered. And they said that they were happy with the recommendations, and they just hoped that no other family had to go through this. But it's awful that they have to go through that for something to be done. And again, the chief, Strathclyde's assistant chief constable, just that we know, but fully accept everything in the report, and we're going to make a number of changes, and you know, we're sorry for the murder that it happened, and they have put a lot of money and staff into the offending monitoring, the offender monitoring unit. But for me, it's just always a wee bit too late, too little, too late. What do you think? Oh, one other thing was, so that was in 2009. What do you think about that today? Do you think things have changed? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I would love to say yes, but I feel like we are still, as you said, the police are still kind of firefighting with this. If they don't have enough resources, they aren't catching things on time. So the fact this was 2009, I feel like we're still in very similar positions. And even what I kind of said earlier about... So the sex offenders, should we alert people, should we not? Oh, there's vigilantes, etc. That is also still happening. Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, so do I feel like we're further forward? I don't actually. Yeah, I don't know about you, Sam, but I really don't think there's a huge difference from now to 2009.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Like, I know there has been some more rules, regulations, policies, etc., etc. But there's a grey area, and... I don't know. I probably not as much change as one would hope. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's been a small amount.
Well, there was an article 10 years later on the 31st of March 2019, and it was a dad in Greater Manchester. He'd recently found out that a convicted paedophile was going to become stepdad to his three children, and that there was nothing he can do to stop it. And then he said...
That's insane.
Isn't it? I mean, the authorities stressed to him that, you know, the family were going to receive all the support they need through a multi-agency arrangement. And that would just fill me with dread, thinking, do you have
yeah, exactly.
No,
you're
promise
not.
Me that my children are going to be okay? That must be terrifying. So has it changed?
Yeah,
this
terrific.
Poor man has no rights. He can't stop it. And he's got to put his trust in this system.
Well, it's like what we were just saying there, we can make people aware, so we've made him aware, but it's like, oh, we'll tell you that your kid's stepdad is a paedophile, but you're aware, but we're not going to do anything. Yeah, so actually sometimes it sounds horrible. You'd be better not knowing.
Yeah,
because what you don't know can't hurt you.
Yeah, that's why, because you said earlier on that it'd be good if there was a database to see how many were in your area, but that would not just mess with your head. You're thinking, who is it? You'd be looking at people, is it you? Who is it? I don't know whether I would like that. I don't know whether or not you're right. Ignorance is bliss. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't have children, so...
I know that sounds terrible saying ignorance is bliss, but
yeah,
I do actually agree, because we're saying that people should be aware, neighbours should be aware, blah, 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 but if they're going to be aware and then there's nothing they can do about
it, what is
the point in being aware?
Exactly.
Like, there's actually no point in knowing that information if it's not going to then help them safeguard their children.
Unless you're not going to actively go vigilante, you know, do the vigilante and attack the people. If you're just going to take that information, use it, and make sure your children are not in their, you know, in the vicinity of them, then that's fair enough. But that's not going to happen. I don't think people can have that information and not do something about it or want to do something about it. So that's my story. It's a lovely story.
I know, it's always
sorry,
so difficult to say this.
God, please
no,
cut that out.
We happy. Always say this. We always say this whenever we do like a child case.
Yeah.
It's always horrible to be like, well, what did you think? Or like try and finish it on something positive.
Uh-huh. because it's there.
No, it's never positive though, but that's a surprisingly unknown case, to be fair. So no, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and thank you so much for coming on as well. Like, that we really, really appreciate you coming and telling our listeners a story, and I think people from this will definitely be going straight over and listening to yours. I don't see why they wouldn't, because it's fab. Well, so thank you for coming on here.
Remember.
If you just want someone on your own, that's all you need.
There'll be nobody to banter with over my one. It's just me, myself and I.
But thank you though, we really do appreciate you coming on, and especially dealing with such a difficult story, that takes a lot. So you done it really well, so thank you so much.
It's been lovely speaking to you, and I can't wait to meet you.
I know, as I said, anytime you need someone to chat to, we are here.
I know, I remember that we could do another crossover, be fab. We could do something at CrimeCon.
I know, that would actually be really cool.
Yeah, we could. That'd be really
cool.
And have a go at that.
Yeah, just start recording in the middle of the busy hall.
Oh no, thanks very much for having me on, it's been really good fun.